Hello and welcome to Baseball America's Draft Podcast. I am Carlos Galazzo, joined by Peter Flaherty. We're back on the show. What's up, Peter?
I'm doing well. We're back after a brief hiatus. You had a much needed beach trip down in the beautiful shore of North Carolina. I will say, from the pictures that you shared in our Slack, it was an 80 grade view, and I was very jealous, but I'm psyched to be back.
You know, just slacking off a little bit here on my end. So apologies to those who had a disrupted podcast schedule. It's my fault. You can send all your hate mail to me. But yeah, it was nice to get down into North Carolina, as always, a little tanner, a little more refreshed and ready to grind here down the stretch. We're only a couple months out from the actual draft, starting to think about draft day itself, the logistics of it this year. Working through our next mock draft update, constantly working through the rankings updates. I guess the big thing we're going to talk about on this episode is we didn't have a podcast for when we dropped it the week of, but we do have a new top 400 update that I'm sure everyone who's listening to this podcast is aware of. We're going to talk through some of the notable movers on that board and then just generally try and get a picture of how the draft class is stacking up at this point in the year. We were talking about this just before we came on, Peter, but it always is a little crazy how quickly the college season plugs along. Like, it's conference tournaments here in a few weeks. I know you're already planning for Omaha. So we're really getting towards the end.
Yeah, we're flooring it. I mean, I feel like I say it every year, and especially since I've been brought on at BA, like, it's insane that this is my now third college season, because it still feels like I'm relatively
new. You're a crafty old veteran now.
But I know, it's nuts that I fall into the veteran category, I guess. But every year, just it flies by. Like, you kind of sit there all fall and winter, itching for opening day, itching for the amateur cycle to start, and then it begins, and you blink, and you know it's Easter, and then you blink again, and you're in Omaha. So whether it be in life or the college baseball calendar, I got to try my best and stop blinking, because everything goes by way too fast. But it is a really fun time of year. There's a lot of money to be made for a handful, if not a number, mm-hmm. of these guys. And whether it be on the draft side or the college baseball side, there's tons to follow and keep track of.
Yeah, there is. So, I mean, I guess I would prefer if at this stage we had some more clarity that we were feeling, at least in terms of how the top players were stacking up in this draft class. I talked to a scout recently who said it was some of the least separation he's ever seen in a draft class at the top, just in terms of how muddled it is. Continuing to make calls around the industry, and it really feels like all of the teams throughout the first round are still all scouting the same players. There don't seem to be many convincing tier breaks. Teams picking further back are like kind of on all of the same guys at the very top, just because no one's really confident in who's actually going to go up top. Every year at this time, regardless of the composition of the draft class, we start to hear about which teams really want to hunt deals. So if there are going to be a lot of deals being hunted in the top 10, that increases the sort of volatility, and you need to have your nets really wide. So unfortunately, I don't know if we're going to ever get to a point where there's like, okay, this guy is the number one. This is the top tier. It starts with this player, it ends with this player. It might just be more muddled throughout. And it's kind of just dealer's choice. But one of the things I found most interesting on this most recent update is the college pitchers who are moving up the board. I think there is a group of arms just kind of trending up. And as we get into conference tournaments, as we get into postseason play, it always feels like college pitchers who perform when the lights are bright can really improve their stock. And also, a lot of teams have not run their models yet, and a lot of these pitchers are still accumulating innings. And once you look up and see, like, what is the overall resume that these college arms are putting together, it's starting to look pretty compelling for those arms. And guys like your favorite Cade Anderson, guys like Kyson Witherspoon, who's just been nails, guys like Liam Doyle, who continues to strike out a lot of batters at an absurdly high clip. Riley Quick, maybe not quite in that tier yet, but a couple of really strong outings recently. I think he could be trending in that direction. And then I don't know if he's a sleeper necessarily, but I think a guy like AJ Russell with Tennessee, who hasn't really thrown a ton of innings yet, but maybe as the season progresses, he gets stretched out a little bit more. He gets a little more innings under his belt, just has a chance to continue moving up, because in lieu of a lot of college hitters that the teams are really confident in the first round, I think these college arms are going to look pretty good.
Yeah, 100%. You mentioned about it, you know, kind of bolstering their stock and being able to make a lot of money here when the lights are at their brightest, and just looking at, you know, Kay Anderson on LSU, Liam Doyle on Tennessee, even Kyson Witherspoon on Oklahoma, and Jamie Arnold on Florida State. Like those, that quartet of teams, a couple more than the others, especially LSU and Florida State, honestly, at this point, have Omaha runs in them. And if any of those four teams are in Omaha, they likely get there with behind a really good start or two from someone like Kate Anderson or Jamie Arnold. And that's going to speak volumes if they go out there and shove in a big time regional environment or a super regional. So it is interesting where we stand now, though. Like also what you had brought up there, it's such a, I'd say, murky group towards the top. Like at this point last year, we kind of had a group of four or five of Jack Caglione, Charlie Kahn, and Travis Bezzana, JJ Weatherholt,
Nick Kurtz, you know,
sort of having Nick Kurtz having separated themselves into that tier of like 1A players and like legit star power type guys. We don't have that this year, especially on the college side. Like, not to, you know, I guess be too blunt, but the college position player side, like it's really rough. I kind of like the depth in the college pitching side a little bit. But man, that college position player group is really, really
the cop at the top, with the college hitters, it really feels like at this point, it's just Iva Arquette and then Jace Laviolette who are being mentioned. It feels like Merrick Houston has cooled off a little bit at Wake Forest. It feels like Dean Curley at Tennessee has cooled off maybe a bit at Tennessee. I mean, Ike Irish is a guy who continues to hit and perform at a high level. I think he could maybe push towards that range, but it really does feel like it's Iva Arquette, it's Jace Laviolette, and then it's a lot of high school shortstops, Seth Hernandez, and these college arms at the very top. I'm wondering if there's like a guy you think could sneak into that range, who's not in those profiles, but you're right. Like how high does a guy like Gavin Keelan go if he continues to perform? I mean, Ethan Conrad, even with the injury, maybe he could surprise some people because it's overall pretty strong profile tool set. I mean, Luke Stevenson has a great profile. Everyone really likes him as a catcher. I would imagine he's just not hitting enough to kind of push himself into that range. But yeah, it is light on the bats at this stage. But let's kind of dig into some of these college arms, because I would say like maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I would have described it as Jamie Arnold in a tier of his own, and these other college pitchers who we mentioned previously kind of fighting in the next tier. I've gotten the sense that like Jamie Arnold is closer to that second tier, or the second tier, I should probably say, is closer to Jamie Arnold now than it was 4 weeks ago. How would you view the pecking order there? Because for me on our board right now, we've got, let me just actually look on the site to make sure I'm using the accurate line. We've got Cason Cunningham at Oklahoma at 9,
Kyson Witherspoon.
Messing up the names here.
If you want me to tear them out.
Yeah, the entire season, the entire spring, the entire draft cycle, Cason Cunningham and Kyson Witherspoon being right beside each other on the board has really got me crazy. But it's Kyson Witherspoon at 10, Liam Doyle at 11, Kate Anderson at 12, and Tyler Bremner at 13. How would you tier out those players?
So I would tier them out probably in the order in which you'd expect me to. I'd still have Arnold at SP1, but I echo your sentiment in that, I guess that formerly 1B tier has now crept its way closer to where Arnold is. So I'd still have Arnold at SP1, but the margin is a lot thinner. Then I'd go Kate Anderson from LSU, SP2, Kyson Witherspoon from Oklahoma, SP3, and then I'd go Liam Doyle at 4. Like, I'm probably lower on Doyle than some. Like, the delivery obviously is unorthodox. It's super efforty. The command is scattered. Like the fastball obviously is a rocket ship, closer to a 7 than it is a 6. And like the secondaries have flashed at times, particularly that split change. But I'd take those three guys over Doyle right now. And Anderson is creeping just closer and closer really by the outing to Arnold. He threw the ball really well again last week.
Yeah, I think if I had to line those guys up, I would go Arnold one. I probably would go Kate Anderson two as well. Then maybe Liam Doyle, then Kyson Witherspoon. But I have to say, after Arnold, it really is tough for me to separate them. I think we need to take a minute and just go over how impressive Kyson Witherspoon's season has actually been, because it's been dominant and it's been consistent. It's impressive to look at and see. I mean, it's a 2.12 ERA through 12 starts, 72 innings. He has a 34.6% strikeout rate, which is nearly 10 ticks higher than his strikeout rate from a year ago. Maybe more impressively to me, the walk rate is 5.9% after being 11.2% in 2024. It feels like he's consistently taking the ball reasonably well. He has one outing where he threw four innings against Alabama in late April or in late March, it looks like. And then otherwise, it's been five plus. His last 5 weeks have been six plus. He's not quite in the strikeout leaderboard category that Liam Doyle and Kate Anderson are kind of battling it out at the top of the leaderboard here, but it's been really impressive. I think he's made the strides that he's needed to make. A year ago or last summer, I was looking at him and looking at the arm action being a little bit odd and looking at the quality of the strikes and wondering, okay, is this more of like a reliever-ish sort of pitcher? And I think he's made as strong a statement as he can to post weekly in the SEC, improve his control, add a new pitch type. And he's looked really good. I think there's a solid shot he goes in a good spot inside the top 10 picks at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I think the top 10 is certainly within the realm of possibility. And I actually was fortunate enough to catch him last summer before he went down to USA on the Cape. And it was the best individual outing I saw throughout the summer. I mean, he carved through a really good lineup that included the likes of, you know, Max Blue, Brooks Bryan, a whole lot of USA guys. And I mean, he was 94 to 97 and holding that with the fastball through five innings. He was popping 98s in the fifth. And it's been a similar story this year. And it's just been week in and week out. Like, he's averaging almost 95 miles an hour on the fastball. He's been up to 99. He'll hold it through the entirety of his outing. It's got a ton of carry, ton of ride through the strike zone, consistently gets above the barrel of opposing hitters. And then he's got a really good slider, kind of a bullet slider, I guess you could call it, that I'd say is a plus pitch at this point. And then he'll also mix in a distinct curveball that's got, you know, plenty of depth and some sharp downward bite. And he throws the changeup only 3% of the time. He actually turned over a few good ones this spring, where whether it's accidental or not, will flash some serious fade to the arm side. So, I mean, you're talking about a guy with a legitimate three pitch, four pitch mix. I've become completely sold on him being a starter. Like, I don't really think there's a whole lot of reliever risk here. I think the how he does it is still a little bit, I guess, not super aesthetically pleasing, just with that shorter arm action. And, you know, he's a smaller guy, but, you know, he's been consistently around the strike zone with his entire arsenal. I think the strike percentage is around 70%. And I think that he, you know, to no fault of his own, has kind of gone overlooked here in this top tier of arms, because what he's done is really, really impressive.
Yeah, I think so. And then with Liam Doyle, I mean, there was a lot of skepticism about kind of how he did it, the qualities of the secondaries, like how it was going to hold up in conference play. And then you look up at his season and it is similarly really impressive. I mean, I still think he has a case as being maybe the best pitcher in college baseball this year. 2.39 ERA through 12 starts, 67 innings. He leads D1 pitchers with 115 strikeouts. The strikeout rate has come down since his like ludicrous early season numbers, as we kind of expected. It's not quite at the same Chase Burns, Hagen Smith, 48% rate from a year ago, but it's still 43.9% strikeout rate, which is awesome. You look at the 8.8% walk rate, right in line with what he's done for 3 years. He's getting still like a 40% miss rate on the fastball. Both the slider and changeup are still missing bats at a high clip. He's throwing strikes with all those pitches, particularly the fastball and the changeup. So And I think for Liam Doyle, what might be encouraging for some teams or maybe people like me who just tend to bang pitchers a little bit more for deliveries that don't look starter-ish, like Chase Burns, same questions throughout college, always threw strikes at a high level and now is just dominating the minor leagues and is looking like one of the best pitching prospects in the sport very quickly. So starting to get to the point where it's like, okay, if the delivery doesn't look how I want, it almost doesn't matter if your stuff is good and you throw strikes, like what can I ask for? He's performed and he's done it all year. So just continuing to stave off the doubters, I guess you could say. And I think there is as good a shot that he's the second pitcher off the board as any of these other guys here.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a non-zero chance he goes in the top 10, obviously, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he goes inside the top five, potentially. Is it my cup of tea? No. Like, would I opt for another arm or two, and even, you know, some of the, whether it be a high school shortstop or one of the higher end college position players available at that point, I probably would over Doyle. Maybe I end up looking stupid in the long run for it, but I don't know. If I were picking in the teens, I couldn't do it. I couldn't pull the trigger. Now, maybe that sounds insane just given what he's doing. Like, the performance obviously has cooled off a little bit from what he was doing early in the season, but I mean, he's still throwing the ball well on SEC play. In SEC play alone, he's got 68 Ks and 47 and a third innings, holding opposing hitters to a sub 170 average. Again, like, that fastball split change combo is pretty lethal. It's just about how, you know, how many strides can you get that kind of cut slider to take, and can you have it be a legit third pitch for him? Like, the fastball alone is just so good though. But yeah, he fits more for me. And like, gosh, I don't know. I still think there's a lot of reliever risk, but like, the upside here is immense. I'd probably take him like from pick 20 or so on. Yeah, I know. Hot take, but like, again, if I were picking in the teens, one of these high school shortstops I'd go with, or like Ike Irish, I would take, maybe even Vahevo Aloy, Gavin Keelan. There are just options that I'd go to before I'd pull the trigger.
Yeah, and then I guess two more pitchers just to mention here in this kind of first round college arm demographic. I think maybe trending in the opposite directions, at least in the last few weeks. But Tyler Bremner, who entered the year as like 1A, 1B with Jamie Arnold, and just really hasn't had this sort of performance to give a lot of confidence. I think he's probably sitting somewhere in the middle of the first round. I mean, based on where we have him ranked at this point, I've talked to some teams who wonder if he's going to like slide into the late teens range at this point. There are just enough questions about how the fastball has played, how the slider has played. No one doubts the changeup quality. The changeup is as advertised. It gets a ton of misses. He still is throwing hard. But I think the teams are just kind of looking at him and wondering, okay, if we think he's this elite starting pitcher, why is the performance not a little bit better against the competition that he's playing? So I think there are some question marks with Bremner, although I would still be really all in on the talent. Sort of maybe a more extreme like Chase Dullinder situation where all the stuff looks good enough to me. I think he's going to be able to make some adjustments and bounce back in terms of performance in pro ball. He's always thrown a really high clip of strikes. So Bremner in that range. And then I think Riley Quick with Alabama is trending upwards recently. I mean, he is a huge physical right-hander. The performance has been really solid throughout. He's sitting with a fastball at 96, 98 miles per hour. He's got a power slider. He's got a changeup. The strikes are okay. Probably the most fringy of this group. Maybe him and Doyle with the fringiest strikes of the guys we're talking about. But the walk rate is a career best. He's thrown 11 starts, 46.2 innings, 3.47 ERA. And I think in particular over the last few outings, I've heard really positive feedback. I think Quick is almost reminds me of Ben Hess in some ways, where like everyone wants to really like him. And if he can dial in the performance and really lock in here down the stretch, I think he's got a chance to push himself really into this middle of the first round range.
Yeah, I'm with you, especially on Quick. And I mean, I'll talk about him more than I will Bremner, but what's interesting about, I'd say, the college pitchers up at the top is, you know, for as well as a lot of these guys are throwing the baseball, the stuff they have, you kind of lack like this physical workhorse kind of classic starter frame. And you get that with Quick. Like he's a big boy. I mean, he's every bit of his 6'6", 245, 250 pound listing. I mean, he was a pretty highly recruited offensive lineman coming out of high school. And I mean, he's just this super physical kid, like throwing bowling ball sinkers in the upper 90s, averaging 96 on it, up to 9,900 miles an hour with that bowling ball sinker. The slider has been really effective and has flashed. I think that, you know, if you're bullish on the pitch, Quick slider, you know, you could see a future above average, if not plus offering. Plus might be a little bit rich at this stage, but, you know, above average, I'd be comfortable with. And then the changeup has also been effective in generating whiffs. So, I mean, for me, it's an enticing three pitch mix. The strikes have been there this year, I think, in an encouraging way. And he's a low mileage arm, obviously due in part to being hurt, but I mean, he's only got 71 2/3 mm-hmm. innings under his belt. And I mean, I think that it's just a really intriguing, archetype all around, and especially where, you know, depending on how the chips fall, where the, especially the college class with it being so thin and which high school shortstops are off the board, like that's a guy that I would consider taking, potentially in the back of the first round, like picks 27 to 34, mm-hmm. 35. Like, I think that there's no reason why he can't go in that range. When all yeah.
Are you at all concerned that the strikeouts aren't super exciting? I mean, he's got a career 25% strikeout rate, which is just a little bit lower than I would expect, given like how impressive the pure stuff is. I mean, the fastball shape is not one that I would expect to rack up a ton of swing and miss, but maybe just feeling like there are some more secondaries in there that could be potential out pitches would make me feel a little better. But I do love the sort of physicality that he provides.
Yeah, the physicality is appealing. Obviously, the strikeout rate is not that of, like, you know, Cade Anderson or Doyle or Jamie Arnold up at the top. Like, he's not necessarily a whiff machine, but I'm a big enough fan of this stuff. And like you said, the fastball shape and pitch type alone is not that. That's like this massive whiff inducer, like that of, you know, Liam Doyle or even Cade Anderson, where it's, you know, just this plus carry, plus ride fastball that plays really well up in the zone. It's almost kind of it's a bowling ball type of heater. So I don't think the lack of K's turns me off necessarily with Quick. Like, does it perhaps limit his ceiling a little bit as to, you know, how high I'd have him also a little bit, but again, that's kind of a back of the baseball card type number. Like, I'm a big enough fan of the body, the low mileage on the arm. I think that there's stuff there that you can develop, especially on the secondary side. So, and I also feel confident, reasonably so, in his ability to stick in a rotation. So, I mean, I think he falls into enough positive buckets for me, at least.
Absolutely.
Whenever we've needed a new writer here at Baseball America, we've used Indeed. Indeed has helped keep us organized and on track and has provided a wide array of qualified candidates. When we need to hire, Indeed is our partner in finding qualified candidates quickly. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your jobs posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. That's one of the things I love about Indeed. Indeed allows us to not just get qualified candidates, but do it all within the Indeed website. It keeps it organized. I can reach out to people. I can send that follow-up message all within Indeed. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring, Indeed, is all you need.
Okay, let's move into maybe conversation about Tennessee, because Tennessee has a chance to have, I think, four players who could go inside the first round. At the top, Liam Doyle, obviously, who we've been talking about, then Dean Curley, Gavin Keelan. And I think the one that's getting a ton of steam recently is Andrew Fisher. And I guess you could even throw maybe a chance for five if you want to get really crazy with A.J. Russell. Again, given how he pitches down the stretch, I don't think it's – like, I think on talent, he has a real chance to fit there and go in that range, even if it's maybe outside looking in right now. But entering the year, I had as much confidence with Dean Curley's offensive profile as any of the hitters in the class. I don't think that he has really followed up with a sophomore campaign that scouts are feeling very, I wouldn't say very confident, but he hasn't taken the step forward I think that scouts were hoping to see him take. And at this point, I wonder if Dean Curley is the fourth or maybe even fifth Tennessee player off the board. That would feel shocking to me if you told me that at the beginning of the year, but given where we expect Doyle to go, given where, like, Gavin Keelan, he dealt with some injuries, but he's really been hitting. Both Keelan and Curley are middle infielders who are probably unlikely to play shortstop. Keelan is the left-handed hitter. I think his pure contact skills are probably a little bit more advanced, and he has taken a step forward in the power department. And then Andrew Fisher, who maybe is one of the more interesting hitters in the country in this range. I think there are going to be a lot of teams who are really like Andrew Fisher because he walks a ton. He makes a lot of contact. He doesn't swing and miss a lot. He doesn't chase a lot. He gets the ball in the air to the pull side with authority. And like we've talked about here, there are not a lot of hitters that teams are going to feel confident about. And Andrew Fisher has gone out and really performed at a high level. Right now he's hitting .318, .500, .728. 17 home runs, three off his career best, which was 20 from a year ago. He's walking at a 23.8% clip with a 14.5% strikeout rate, both career best for him. So take that wherever you want to go. I know I just spit a lot out at you, Peter, but Tennessee is always fascinating. They're going to be again on day one.
Yeah, I think we'll probably save the best for last, at least on the position side with Gavin Keelan. So I'll try and stick to Curley and Fisher, especially the latter. I mean, Curley at this point, I mean, I feel for him because he started off the year relatively strong, kind of doing to an extent what people expected him to. But it's just progressively, it's gotten worse as the spring's gone on. It's clear he's really in his head on both sides of the baseball, especially on the dirt. I know that last weekend or a couple weekends ago now against LSU was really rough at third. And I mean, I'm not saying he has the yips, but in just like watching him, like they had him at second base this past weekend. And just kind of watching, you know, the actions and how he goes about, especially throwing. It's really, really tough at the moment. So I'm hoping he can push through it. You know, he's got a chance to finish out the year strong, but yeah, I mean, he's a guy that, you know, for me personally, he's slid a little bit down in terms of that college position player pecking order, and has scared me off some. Like, I don't know where I would take him at this point. But with Fisher, he's a really interesting one, and he's gained some positive, you know, steam this spring. So, I mean, he's a really physical, strong kid, swings with the intent to do damage each time he's in the box. He doesn't get cheated. Like, the bat speed is real. Anyone that's seen him swing the bat knows that, especially at the bat speed and not getting cheated. But the approach with him really stands out. Like, it's a comfortably plus approach. It's patient, but it's not passive. I think he's running a sub 20 and maybe even around 15% overall chase rate.
17% is what I'm looking
at. The swing decisions. Yeah. The swing decisions with him are really polished. And I'd say that as far as contact skills go, it's average, potentially above average, a tick above average, I'd say. And his in zone swing rate, just going back to like the patient, not passive approach, I think he's running a 70% in zone swing rate. And it's plus power to the pull side. I will say with him, for me, he's definitely a first baseman defensively. He's not a super athletic kid. And for me, just trying to bake in what I saw on the Cape. And then also this summer, it's definitely six power to the pull side that he has no issue getting to in game. But I don't know, maybe overall in terms of, you know, driving the baseball to the opposite field, and I could be light here, it you know, maybe 55 mm-hmm. power, 50 hit for me. I think the first round is a little bit rich for me at this point. And I think when you kind of peel the onion back a little bit, if that's even the right analogy, and not that the cape is the end all be all and all this, but I think that, you know, performance and data with a wood bat is so valuable now, just given the nature of the game collegiately with, you know, how juiced the mm-hmm. bats and balls are. His max EV on the cape was sub 100. So, I mean, you're not looking at this super loud batted ball profile with wood. So, I mean, now you're looking at least just from where I'm at, 55 power, 55 hit, first baseman who isn't a super, super great athlete. Like, I don't think him versus Blake Burke isn't even a debate, you know, for me. It's okay. Burke all the way. So, like, Fisher, for me, fits probably in the third or fourth round, I could be completely on an island, but I would.
I think I've gotten like really into the pro Andrew Fisher, the big fish camp recently. I really find myself liking him. I think I would probably prefer him to Blake Burke at this point. Blake Burke, I don't think was a, I think he was a fairly one-dimensional sort of prospect. I think, like, if there are some real concerns with the top end exit velocities with wood in particular, I would maybe be a little bit more paused. But what we have so far through the spring, which admittedly with metal bat, it's a little bit juice, but like just seeing the bat speed and the physicality and some of the home runs he's pulled, I'm not too concerned that he's going to be able to do that with the wood bat at the next level. I think his approach is far better than what Blake Burke's was a year ago. Maybe not quite the same contact skills, which maybe you prefer the contact skills and you'd live with a little bit more of a free swinger. But Andrew Fisher is definitely not a free swinger. And I think especially Fisher compared to some of the other college hitters in this year's class, I just think he's going to look really appealing to a lot of teams. Like just thinking through James Tibbs from a year ago, he was very much a hit over like he had to hit. He had a very limited corner profile, corner outfield, maybe it's first base. I don't think Tibbs showed the sort of power that we see with Andrew Fisher throughout his career. I mean, he had 28 home runs, but the power to me is more exciting with Fisher. Maybe I'm too loud on Fisher's power, but I just like, I don't know. I've got a lot of comfort with his offensive profile once we get past like Vahiva Aloy on the college hitting side. And I will also say too, just pulling up this trio of Tennessee batters, Tennessee infielders in conference, Dean Curley's conference OPS 728 with a 22.8% strikeout rate. Gavin Keelan's conference OPS 771 with a 13% strikeout rate, which for normal hitters, 13% is great. For Gavin Keelan, that's like, whoa, 13%. But Andrew Fisher, his conference OPS 1100 with an 18.9% strikeout rate and a 21% walk rate. Like he's performed the best of these guys in conference. And maybe you'll say like, yeah, well he better because he plays first base. So he has to, but I don't know. I just think there's going to be some teams who would look around and they're like, yeah, we'd maybe prefer some more upside or some more up the middle profiles. But we also just, the most important tool is the hit tool. And I think Fisher has it. So
yeah, and I mean, I don't like, he'll grade out really well for model teams. Like, it wouldn't at all shock me to see him go in the first round in a decentish spot. I, again, for me, just like from a tool standpoint, like obviously the approach is plus. You could relatively easily argue, I think, a 55 hit. So I'm probably the low man on Fisher with the 55 all encompassing power, in game with Wood and the 50 hit. Like, again, to reiterate, it's a comfy six to the pull side, wood, metal. No one's going to doubt that or debate that. I just think all in all, in terms of all fields power, for me, it was a 55 and is a 55. But yeah, the approach has been outstanding. Swing decisions, outstanding. It's a hard one to top, especially in the college ranks when you're in this range. But just from a pure tools standpoint. Like if, you know, first baseman for me with that kind of hit and power grade, I'd again, third, fourth round, probably I'd feel comfortable pulling the trigger on him as in the third, I would say. And I'm probably alone on an island with that
one. I think this conversation could probably be useful, because I think these conversations happen more in the industry than people like to think. Like I think there's a lot of maybe certainty that's placed on the available draft rankings, but there is a lot more volatility in how specific teams view players when comparing to each other, and even when comparing to scouts inside the room. I've talked to a number of scouts this year on a number of players that some teams view as like top 50 picks, maybe fringe first rounders, and other teams are like, yeah, like decent player, would like to get him in the fourth round maybe, but before that, no. So like there's a lot of players that, whether you're looking for safety and floor and like solid skills and track record, or if you're more inclined to take athleticism and physicality and tools and upside, like you could be significantly far apart on players. And I think that's particularly true this year, which hopefully will lead to a little bit of chaos on draft day. Now, hopefully we're aware of the chaos. Hopefully we know what's going to happen, because that would look great. That would feel nice. But I do think if you're just kind of casually watching, a lot of these players could go in a lot of different spots. As I said at the beginning, there's like not a ton of separation. It really comes down to like, what are you prioritizing as a scouting staff? What are you really digging into? What are you weighting heavily? It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it really from the jump, but this thing could go haywire really, really early on and kind of create a little bit of a domino effect throughout the first round, throughout the first couple rounds. I mean, I'd say for me, one guy, not to keep it rolling with the Tennessee talk, but Gavin Keelan is someone who I'd feel comfortable taking him in the first. Potential, like him versus Vahevo Loy is obviously an interesting one, an interesting debate. But with Keelan, like, the performance has been excellent. You got to be encouraged by the uptick in power output. I'm curious your thoughts on it. I mean, I'm just crazy conservative on all these guys to a fault, but like with Wood and professionally, I'd probably give his power like a comfortable 45, which I don't think is like a super knock on him, but like, do you see him getting to legitimately like average power professionally?
I would
with
say
Wood?
Probably more fringy to me as well. I think that 45 grade seems fair, but that's okay. Going from like a 30 preseason to 45 now seems like a healthy step forward. Even if he's not average or above average power, I think what you're going to project with him moving forward now is still maybe multiple grades better than what you would have projected entering the year. Cause he was really this contact merchant who did not show much of any power prior to this season. Maybe I'm being a little critical. He hit 9 home runs in 2024, but in terms of like Vahevo Loy versus Keelan, I think I would probably tend to be more excited on taking a shot on someone like Vahevo Loy. I mean, there are some like approach questions and some more hit tool questions with Vahevo, but man, I really think he has like stepped up this year and really performed. He's continued to do it in conference. Again, like as teams are diving into these conference splits and performance against really good competition, Vahevo has really done well. He's hitting 353, 442, 676 with 9 home runs in conference, 20% strikeout rate, 12.5% walk rate. That's pretty significantly better than what both Keelan and Curley, to just loop him into this conversation as well, have done in conference. And I think just his athleticism and tool set and the physicality that Vahevo brings compared to Keelan definitely makes me more excited about taking a shot on him, even while kind of acknowledging there's probably a little bit more hit tool risk. So I would maybe rather have Vahevo right now.
Yeah, I'd probably take Vahevo too, not to open that can of worms. But yeah, I mean, with Vahevo, it's plus power. I think you can feel pretty comfortable sticking a 6 on it. And with me, like, he had hit tool questions coming into this spring. After last season where he kind of underwhelmed, he got going a little bit towards the end, but there are real hit tool questions. There still are for me hit and approach questions, especially against spin and the overall swing decisions. But I've been really encouraged by the direction in which it's trended this spring. Like, it's gotten markedly better. And not only that, like, the defense was another question mark. Like, you know, he kind of seemed like a more likely than not bet to move off of shortstop coming into this year. I'm now more convinced he could stick at the position. The actions and clock have gotten better. The arm strength is there. He's making plays up the middle. Like, I mean, I don't see, I mean, there's obviously still a chance he could move off of the position, but I mean, I think that there's a decent chance he could stick there long term. So, I mean, when you're looking at a shortstop with plus power that he gets to in game, he got to it with Wood. The hit tool is trending in the right direction, especially in this year's class. I mean, I would pull the trigger on that somewhere like in the mid teens. It obviously depends on how every chip falls and who's there and who's not. But I think that's the general range for me, at least, he fits in right now. And at least like circling back to Keelan to close the book on that, like, you got to be encouraged by the uptick in power output. Again, 45 for me long term. He never really drove the baseball in my looks this summer. Obviously, he's made some adjustments and some small ones that have paid dividends that have, I think, been a part of this power uptick. Like, he looks like he's a little bit more into his backside and back hip. He's coiling more. Like, they've paid off. He's getting the ball up in the air a little bit more. I think the fly ball line drive percentage has increased from 51 to 58%. And he's not the free swinger he was during his two seasons at Louisville. Like, he's being more selective in a positive way. We've seen that in the K to walk, or I guess in his case, walk to K ratio. And it seems like he's hunting pitches and swinging against pitches he knows he can do damage against. Like, the barrel skills are there. He's backspinning the baseball more. Like, it's comfortably a 55 hit for me. So I think, again, though, he's not a super great athlete. He's a second base only. The injuries have kind of, you know, not super great and scare me a little bit. So it's like, you know, if you're sitting there with a fringy athlete at second base with a 55 hit, 45 power, like, how high does that really go? Like, I think you could argue a six hit, but I think with Keelan, you know, some of the sentiment here is kind of a reflection of the college position player class as a whole, is like, where is there a slam dunk, no doubt plus tool? Like, I think so many guys lack that at this point. Like, obviously Jace has comfortably six power, closer to a seven, Vejeva six power, but especially from a hitability standpoint and kind of getting that perfect marriage of hit power, like, you don't really have that at all in this year's class. Like, there's some big time give and take. Like, you know, you could have a guy that's a plus hit, but then it's like well below average power. You know, you could have the plus power and it's fringy at best hit, maybe average hit. So again, it's a really fascinating class on the position player side for a whole lot of reasons. I guess long-winded answer short, I'd take Keelan also, like, in that later teens range. I feel pretty good about him hitting. I think, you know, he's unlocked something with the swing adjustments a little bit, like just swinging with more intent and more into his lower half in general. But
I think you've made a very compelling argument for taking a high school shortstop or a high school player in this year's class. Feels like that's what teams need to do. That's where all the exciting tools and athletes are. And circling back to the very top, the draft's happening today. I probably would want to take either Seth Hernandez, Ethan Holliday, or Eli Willits, the first overall pick. I'd probably be bearing down on those three and seeing who goes. So, I mean, you know my love of Seth Hernandez. I don't need to reiterate it to you.
Would I take a high school righty one? Probably not. But I'm with you on the high school shortstops, and not to tease a future episode, maybe even next week's episode. But, you know, for the sake of the podcast, at the very least, throwing Cason Cunningham and Ethan Holliday in that bucket for now, even though both are pretty sure bets to move off of it, even though Ethan defensively has been pretty pleasantly surprising this spring. But you've got a group of Ethan Holliday, Eli Willits, Billy Carlson, Cason Cunningham, JoJo Parker, Steele Hall, Daniel Pierce.
It's a good group.
You know, Brady Ebel's not my the guy I'm super high on, but, you know, Tate Southazine.
It's a lot of depth. A lot of Ryan Mitchell. There.
Like, it's depth, tools, and talent. Like, I'd be honing in on a lot of those guys. So that's a fun group. The college pitching depth is also, I'd say, I wouldn't necessarily call it like a huge plus, but I think that there's a lot of value to be found on days two and three. Well, I guess just day two,
right?
Now, but
yeah, I think people I've had this conversation with a lot of scouts as we're just kind of making the rounds and talking through players. Like, yeah, I think this guy fits on day two. I'm like, which day two are you talking about? Most are still in old school day two, which I don't know. I'll be curious to see what people think of the new format from like just a draft consumption standpoint, rounds one through three on day one and then four through 20 day two. Don't have any strong takes on it right away. Do you, Peter?
No, nothing that'll make for a good sound, but I don't think, I guess I'm kind of just curious to see how it'll
go. A few more C4 energy drinks for day one, I guess is what I'll have to do.
Yeah, I think that's, I think that's the perfect place to start. I think it'll be like, you know, you don't obviously have as much time to adjust and like reset. So I'm curious to see how it'll play out.
I'm hopeful that teams will bring more of their scouts into the room, because I think you'll probably need them more when it's, you don't have the, like you said, you don't have that extra day to reset. I imagine the pace is going to be pretty quick, or especially feel quick. It's going to feel like things are moving. You're going to have to be really reactive. You're going to need to know signability info really quickly. So I would like for that to be the impact. Like, the scouts are all brought in for every team and they all have more of a voice for that second day. I think that'd be cool. But just like strategically in general, we'll be curious to see how teams deal with that. And if we notice anything, but yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah, no doubt. It'll be moving at kind of a breakneck pace. I'm sure it'll feel fast. Interesting to see. I'll be interested to see how teams react and adjust absolutely. To
okay.
it.
Okay, I think that's going to wrap it up for us today. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. Thanks for supporting Baseball America and subscribing and allowing us to do this full-time and to bring you these podcasts and spend time diving into these players and writing about them. Tons of stuff on the website to check out. Our most recent top 100 update on the pro side is on the site with some good supplemental content. We've got mock draft coming. We've got Field of 64s running out. Peter and Jacob top 25s every week. So it's all gas, no brakes right now. So we'll be back next week with another regular episode of the Draft Pod. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.